sucked into like a sun or another planet, why is it able to maintain any kind of direction without getting pulled into something?
Probably maneuver it past all the gravitational fields of all the planets, and it leaves the solar, leaves our solar system, and then it's in between gravitational bodies. So there's really nothing, nothing affecting it. Once it leaves the solar system, it's past Pluto, and unless it collides with an asteroid or something weird like that, there's probably nothing else out there. It probably has, you know, millions of light years or whatever until it hits the next galaxy or whatever, so it has a long ways to go before it comes into any field of any other solar system.
Okay, that makes sense. You know, we have our own little technet going. 82MMY. All right, thanks for that. If anyone else wants to comment, let it drop. And we're back to, let's see, 82. Boy, I can't get them. I something. I can't get the two last letters to stick in my brain.
My call is AC2IS. I guess IS as in information systems, or the word is. Maybe that will help. But to comment on your first question, do we have the capability to control Voyager 1? Do we have any control? I believe from listening to previous technets that the answer is yes, and that we have at least the ability to command the transmission rate, to step the transmission rate down lower and lower. And I believe if Voyager 1 loses signal from Earth, that it automatically starts to spin and tries to reacquire a signal from Earth. Those are my best answers. Maybe somebody else can tell me if they were the right ones. AC2IS.
There will be some information available on the internet about Voyager 1 and the other Voyagers. You do a Google search, or possibly on AMSAT, or possibly on NASA.gov or something like that. You may be able to find more detailed information about what's going on with those probes. I'm not an expert on it, so you know, Paul S. DeWine would probably know, but yeah, I would say they still have some control over it. Like you said, the data rate is probably being lowered to conserve energy as it gets further away. So sooner or later, it's going to probably run out of electricity or electrical power, and then that'll be the last they hear from it. And it'll keep going, and whoever finds it, like the Star Trek, when it molded, melded with a foreign probe and came back looking for its creator there, like that.
Yeah, I was looking one time, looked that thing up. You know, that thing will fit in your living room. It's only about 15, 16 feet wide. Do you think even with the antennas? It's not that big. That's a big dish. Like, you know, it's like 16 feet. So it will fit in your house. interesting.
Mind-boggling how far away that thing is right now.
Thing we got that we communicate with, I would think. Well, it's pretty cool that they can control the Mars rover and all of that from this far away. I know, they send the thing to command. I don't know how many hours it takes for it to respond, but and I don't even know at what frequency they send the command. I mean, all that stuff's available. I guess you could look it up. You know, they tell the Mars rover to turn right. It takes a certain amount of hours to get there, and what frequency do they send that at? You know?
I don't think it takes hours to get. It only takes 25 seconds to do moon bounce. So you send the signal to the moon and then it comes back. It takes about 12, 13 seconds each way, so it takes about 25 seconds, I believe, 30 seconds to get a bounce off the moon. Mars, probably, 5 minutes maybe to get a signal over to Mars. So it's not, it's you might be thinking of Voyager, that it takes many hours or many days or whatever it takes. I don't know how far away Voyager is, but Mars rover does not take that long to get a signal to it, but it actually tells something. I don't know what's involved, what kind of how much data they have to transfer or whatever, so it might take an hour to send it a command if the data rate's very slow, and I don't know what they're doing exactly, but once again, Paul would probably know. Not out here, then, I believe. Paul, you out there to be Ms. North? You out there to be JTV?
Yeah, if you think about it, speed of light to the sun is only 8 minutes. So, you're right. So, 8 minutes to the sun, only 5 or 8 minutes to Mars, radio wave time. So, yeah, it can't take much longer than that. So, yeah, I guess I wasn't thinking of it that way.
That's probably, the speed of light distance to get the signal from the Earth to Mars, but they might have to transmit a long packet of data, which should be at a fairly complicated series of data packets to get the thing to do any kind of movements or commands or whatever. So that might take, a considerable amount of time to get all that data over to actually get it to. Don't know, but I'm sure they were on the internet about all that. Even now, Wikipedia.
Yeah, okay, Roger. Yeah, so it's about 10 times the amount, like an hour or something, but it's not hours and hours.
Get something out to Voyager that's way out there in the boondocks. I think that probably takes hours and hours to get a signal out there and then to get a response. I'm not sure how long it is, but it's a long time. JTV.
WB2BXO with a comment.
SBXO.
Okay, wasn't sure if I was being copied. WB2BXO via Echo Link. I think somebody said the round trip EME time, Earth Moon Earth time, was on the order of 20 seconds or something like that. It's actually around 2.6 seconds or something like that round trip time, I think. Is the moon, something like 220,000 miles from Earth, average distance, and speed of light is about 186 miles per second. So, the light speed travel time is definitely not on the order of 20 seconds. But go ahead.
Okay, I thought it had a 2 in it. I wasn't sure if it was 2.2 seconds or 20 seconds. So, I think you're right. 2 seconds is correct. Thanks for the correction, WJTV.
Yeah, the time to Mars is probably, I've heard numbers on the order of like 5 to 8 minutes, I think. 8 minutes, I think, is the time to the sun. I guess that's a figure that's fairly easy to look up to also, but, it's hours and hours when you get out to where Voyager is. I forget what Dick said. It's something on the order of 40 hours or something. Something totally insane at this point. Men of Frank, currently in northeast Philadelphia. Go ahead.
The distance between the planets varies greatly. I mean, the distance between the Earth and the Moon is fairly constant, but the distance between the planets, I mean, it depends how far we are from Mars. I mean, we could be, at some points we could be further or closer, so depending, I guess, on what part of the orbit that Mars is and what part of the orbit Earth is, where it is, in relation to Mars, it can be closer or farther, so the time, I guess, could vary quite a bit.
Is that
Miami,
Philadelphia Station? I'm sure it's where you've tuned in due to TechNet, and you were just standing by listening over.
No, I came on here for the TechNet. I haven't heard very much this evening. I guess there's some technical problem with the TechNet, I take it. So, go ahead.
Yeah, Roger, that was my question. How did you come to get tuned in? And you said that's what I wanted to know. So you answered it, yes, thank you. I was curious. So Philadelphia, PA, right?
Yeah, Leslie, I noticed we're in Pennsylvania, that's correct.
Some radio stations from Philadelphia the other night, last night or the night before, we were having a very large amount of ground wave ducting and propagation going on in VHF band, and I think I was picking up WOGL in Philadelphia, I think it was on 98.1.
Yeah, a friend of mine in North Jersey got on one of the local repeaters yesterday evening. The IMD that the band was open, and I said, well, you know, try one of the local repeaters and see if you can talk to me, and he got in. I mean, it's really not very far away, but, you know, FM is not a very good long-distance mode.
Sometimes the atmospheric conditions allow long-distance propagation on fairly short frequencies like VHF and UHF. And, it's kind of rare, but it's becoming more common lately. I don't know why exactly. There's something weird going on with the atmospheric conditions that allow that dumping, that signal to go up and get reflected around in the lower parts of the atmosphere, probably where the clouds are located, and get past 10 or 20,000 feet and comes back down again. And it's been happening fairly frequently lately, I've heard. I can really tell as tuned to the weather stations on the 162 band of 400, 450, 500, 475, 555, and those weather stations can sort of give you an idea if there's any VHF propagation going on. I can tell if I hear one in Connecticut here, out here in Smithtown on 162-500. I'm in a mountain in Connecticut, fairly pretty far north of me, and if I can hear that come in fairly strong, usually about S8 or S9, I can tell there's a ducting going on, because I usually only hear it about maybe S1, just barely can hear it.
Yeah, that's how a friend in North Jersey knew last night they could probably call me on one of the local repeaters down here, because he was hearing Philadelphia weather very loud. He said, well, Philadelphia weather is very loud, I could probably work your local repeater, Frank. So I said, okay, let me turn on the HT and see if you can work me. Yeah, no, ducting is fairly common at this time of year when there's a lot of moisture in the air, and when a front comes through, the signals are refracted along the frontal boundaries, I think. And ducting is also pretty common along the coast and over water. I guess that's why there's a group in Maritime Canada now trying to work the path between North America and Europe on 2 meters using digital modes, because this is the time of year when there's a potential for that kind of propagation in the northern hemisphere. But go ahead.
Doesn't look like any of the regular TechNet guys are out there. Any of the guys, WGP, S2N, or WNEC gentlemen want to pick it up and answer any of these discussion going on? Go ahead, WJ2N. PJ2N,
this is
WGP. WJ2N, do you know what happened to the TechNet tonight?
No, I have no idea.
Turns it on around a little after 8, I didn't hear anything. I believe Dick might have had a radio problem, I'm not sure.
Okay, thanks for cutting me, Dick.
Guys, you can go on, no, have your cues there, whoever wants to pick it up, go right ahead, and I'll be standing by, listening to the JTV, standing by.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody has checked any of the other Limewatch repeaters. They might have moved over to one of the other Limewatch repeaters or delinked it for some reason. Sometimes that happens. but usually I'm able to find them somewhere on the internet when that happens. Anyway, I'll be listening also 7-3 for the time being. Would be nice if Paul or somebody comes on here. But I guess either everybody's busy or there's some technical issue tonight. You'd be 2BXO via Echo Link from Northeast Philadelphia. 7-3.
I'm hearing any activity on 449-125, and the link is active on the Selden 147-375, so I don't think it's a repeater issue. It must have been some other kind of issue either with fixed equipment or maybe another technical issue that I'm not aware of. So as far as I can tell, I mean, it doesn't look like there's going to be any tech net tonight, I guess. So just try again next Monday to be JTB.
Yeah, Roger, this is the main repeater. Anything with that, you know, this is always the now function.
KB2RXL, New York City.
That's the New York City station. Go ahead.
Thanks, guys. I'm listening here for a little while. Is it possible to get a little help on a computer question?
Oh, go ahead. I might know the answer. I can try.
All right. Appreciate it. Due to an injury, I haven't been able to get to my computer or my radio for a couple of years, and I just got back to it. And it's been about 10 years or 8 years, and with all these new sites out there now, is there any way possible, do you know of anybody who makes any type of black box or breakout box where I can take the output of my computer monitor or my digital out and break it down in baseband video, you know, like with, for example, a BNC out or, you know, video baseband out? I can record it to a DVD, something that's streaming live?
Yeah, they make a box called, what's the name of that thing? The Dazzle, they call it. Like $30. You can buy it, probably can buy it at Thompson USA or any of those, any of the computer stores. And, you know, you want, like, standard video out, right? There are converter boxes that you can buy to do that. Take, like, a VGA out and convert it to standard, you know, like, RCA-type jack.
ACDIS for the comment?
Yeah, sure, go ahead. Yeah, let me take a PFC out of it. Go ahead.
This is ACDIS. I guess I have a different interpretation of what your question was. Maybe that's the answer to your question. Let me know if you think that's an appropriate answer. AC2IS.
Yeah, IS, you got totally jammed. You might want to try to repeat it.
Okay, this is AC2IS, and what I was saying was that you can find very cheap radios, like around $15, designed to work with software-defined radio applications like SDR Sharp that allow you to record baseband audio to what they call IQ files. And I was wondering if that was the answer to your question, AC2IS.
Baseband audio files? The audio I can get out of the computer, obviously. Whatever's streaming down is that audio. It's just a video. I wanted to, for example, record a DVD or a VHS, you know, from the multi-pin, or from, like, you the first guy that came in, he kind of helped a little bit, said I can find it for, like, $30-$40. That's cheap. I mean, I realize I'm not recording broadcast quality. That would be nice. But the source material is not broadcast to begin with, obviously. I'm just looking at, for example, go to a website where they have, say, a live concert, for example, and they're streaming it live. And I want to be able to record it to a DVD so I can watch it and play it back later. Even if I have to make a file of it or something. Obviously, I have to record it in real time. I understand that. Because there's no file for me to download. So real time will have to be. Getting the audio out is not a problem. It's just breaking the video down to NTSC. From my digital into my monitor.
or out of the computer. I was told by somebody that a standard video card wouldn't help me because I'm taking it from a website.
KB2RXL, KB2BBB, it will allow you to get into, you're using that word base, whatever, but, you know, it'll let you convert a VGA to a standard RCA video, but whether or not you can do it live is an iffy thing, because, you know, normally you got to download something in some form first, and then transfer. You may not, you know, just to go live straight streaming, that I can't guarantee, you know. There may be software you need to do that, you know, because you know you're trying to, you know, you'd be watching it on your screen live streaming, and then you're trying to go off at the same time out through the device. That I don't know. You may need a software to help you do that. So that part to be. Usually, if it's coming through your computer, you can always download it in some form. Used to be if you downloaded Real Player, you could always right-click it and download it no matter what it was. Real Player, if you could play it on YouTube, you could download it. If you downloaded Real Player, it integrated with your computer, and if you could play it on YouTube, right-click it and download it, and it will download it in some kind of MPEG format or AVI or something.
Okay. I appreciate that. Oh, well, somebody recommended some site that was the YouTube stuff, for example, called Clip Converter. Like, that's to convert a clip. I'm talking about streaming something live, obviously. I tried on a site that was playing a concert, for example, and it just wouldn't work. And I've been at this for too long. $30, it sounds like awful cheap, to be honest. $40 sounds awful cheap. Back a few older days when I used to play with this stuff, it'd be thousands of dollars for boxes like that. That would do anything of the sort. I would assume there'd be a time-based error of some sort. But I don't have a clue.
B2RXL, KB2BBB.
Hey.
Steve, if you're on 5-2 tomorrow, which you sometimes are, I would put that question to KC2DTT, and I think he'd be able to help you. But again, his call is KC2TANGO. We spoke with him before. He may be able to, I'm almost sure, he'll be able to direct you in the way you want it, the right way to go. KB2DTT, clear.
Real fucking busybody, isn't he? He's got to get his nose in every conversation.
Let him talk. What the heck? All right, thanks, Carl. Appreciate it.
I mean, and just to reiterate, this is a different issue, really. Converting the video to RCA video, that's $30. That's what you need to do. Live streaming, your other issues, and that's totally different.
He's got a busy body, JP, and he's got to get his nose in every conversation he's with about the radio. That's a whole bag. It's all bag. He's a freaking bag, you see. He sits there with me all day just so he can get his nose in all of people's business.
Thanks a lot for the help, KB2RXL.
Should we be interested?
KB2XJN.
Yeah, son.
How's your day?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, a little productive today and yesterday. Got a few things done. What have you been up to?
I was doing some editing, some interesting stuff. Roy wrote me a few letters. Very amazing. Yeah, I would love to have the chance to meet with you and Roy together. As they see him.
Well, I doubt if Roy would want to meet with me. there'd be no meeting there. But, yeah, he writes well. I've read quite a few of his responses, and got some great comments.
Oh, yes, yeah. Actually, one of the things I was trying to be clear about with him is what is of unity for me. Unity is hard to be achieved, because then you would, wouldn't have the losses. Back to you.
Well, we don't even know if it exists. It hasn't yet, so, you know, that's what you're involved with. But it's a difficult thing over unity, all right? So even unity is difficult to maintain. So over unity, and then to have enough over unity to make a feedback circuit, things like that, yeah, it gets a little complex. But, you know, one of the things that you're doing, you know, you've got some nice equipment you're purchasing. Eventually you're going to get it to work where you can, you know, be able to continue on your discovery. And you're going to be learning a lot of new things that you haven't experienced before, and operating machinery and all that stuff. But you're really covering areas that have been well covered with much better machinery. So are you going to find anything new? Yes, new to you. But, you know, nothing new for the purpose of benefiting man. That's all been done. But what you're doing is educating yourself, which is beautiful.
Yeah, well, it's just the way of using proper description. What I think about Roy is that he is a man of many talents. And he could be a writer. He could be an editor. I mean, look at the form he used to formulate his thoughts. Unbelievable. That's very true.
I don't know. Maybe he just has time on his hands. But, yeah, he's well-versed, and, like I said, writes well. No problem with that. It's something I generally don't do. You know, it's different when I'm getting paid for it, but I don't do it because short answers to me are the best and the quickest. When you get them too long, it can generate questions about the development of where you're going with it.
C2IS, comment.
Go ahead.
This is AC2IS. I think at the end of the last TechNet, there was some talk about alternative power systems for cars, maybe. And I was wondering if anyone had considered aluminum batteries. AC2IS.
Done.
That I'm not sure of. I believe that's Bill. I'm not sure. I've heard about them, but I don't know much about them. But I'm banking on hydrogen systems. I think when they find out how and the best way to produce hydrogen, I think that's going to be our next step. I don't agree with wind energy and solar energy as being very helpful because of the requirements. The windmills are not neighborhood friendly. The solar panels have a lot of maintenance issues. You know, eventually they're working their way toward it, but I think hydrogen's going to be the answer. But that's only my opinion.
Okay, interesting. What a fun. John, first I was trying to touch the basis on unity and over unity. As far as hydrogen, if the automobile maker decided to put them on the market, means that there's a pretty much reliable device, although they have in mind to charge people for the fuel as well. Let me jump. So, Chan, I have less problem over with Unity than I have with Unity, because for me, perpetual motion machines could have the losses and should not work. As far as the over Unity for me is just a process or of another form of energy conversion work. It would sound as under. I always say that we not always will be able to automatically clear, understand what energy comes from. So the benefit is that energy that is being used for us is not yet in the tax code or not yet in some business interest or priority rights or ownership and ratio.
Well, whether it's in a tax code or in the profit structure of the company, it really makes no difference. We have to find it first, and then we have to find out a way to couple it, so we have to discover the energy first. There's not going to be any over-unity until you find out where that excess is going to come from. You know, but I know you're aware of that.
No, for me it's not to find the energy, for me it's just to assign the energy. Because it must be an energy that not necessarily is not discovered yet. This is just that there is not assigned to it, but it's being utilized and reached yet.
Well, whatever it is, the mysterious energy, you have to, maybe it's already there, because we're not going to create mysterious energy. So we have to locate it, identify it, and then find out how to make it productive and to run what we want to run with it. But get out there. It might be, but it just hasn't been found yet, and there's no proof of anything. Perpetual motion is garbage. You know that, and I know that. But undiscovered energy, I mean, look, there's dark energy. We don't know what that is. We have an idea, but we're not sure. Something like that could be used. Who knows?
Yeah, I agree with you. Perpetual motion machines is garbage. Even though that one of them might of work, helping itself with something of small percentage to compensate the losses cannot do anything that is beneficial and to issue.
Well, I don't believe there's ever been a perpetual motion machine that actually worked, never. Now, if we have a perpetual machine in development and somehow it's going to get energy, okay, how does it do that? What is the vehicle that allows us to capture that energy and deliver it back and in a coherent manner to increase the efficiency above 100%? Sounds silly. Don't know.
It's a simple explanation. Let's say we have an average guy who saw the submarine. And then he meets for some magic reason with a scientist from 18th century. And then for that scientist from 18th century, it's hard to believe what's going on there, because he never saw submarines. The same story would be we showed the microchip that everybody saw. And to show it to the guy who from 18th century who never saw it, he would have a problem to qualify it or classify it. So the same story would be with the source of the energy that is being used in so-called over-unity machines, which are actually used to discover sort of the energy could be very much precise.
Well, you're selling the previous civilization short, because there were many things that they have, as we're finding out now, that we are just developing and finding use for now in our last 100 years, 200 years. Just like the diving helmet. That's not something recent. That was used, I don't know if it was the Sumerians or was somewhere in the Mediterranean, I believe, and that they now have evidence of that. So they would have understood it. Like if anybody bright, I mean, if you went to Archimedes and describe something and you can show him and prove it, okay, so he's going to follow it. Great people will do that. but you can't just go with imaginary numbers and, you know, like these idiots on YouTube do with some of their claims. You just can't do that. It doesn't make any sense. There's no empirical data there that makes any facts, really facts.
Well, I might say this way. Let's say two scientists meet together and one is very much traditional one and the other one is kind of a weird one because he went above the limits that he's allowed to go to. So now, I would say we are not on the same boat because we may differ. You can differ from another scientist the way that the dog differs from the human. So let's say I am a dog and I couldn't be able to process the colors the way that a human does. Or let's say the argon, the guy wouldn't be able to process colors as I do, because I see them as a dog. So by that, the entry platform in many areas of life would not be the same for us when we're starting from point A and going to point B. So the half tones for one person would look different as a grayscale for the other. And to exchange.
Well, I have an issue with your logic because you're a one-dimensional thinker when you say that. Don't talk about people being above or even or below. I mean, that's one direction. You must think about translateral motions. Now, they can be at the same level. One could be above the craft of the boat. The other one could be outboard of the boat. He's on the same level, but he's just not in the boat. So there's many ways to think about that. Must be more than one dimensional thinker.
Well, John, one person might be brilliant in something, and the rest of him is just very much average. And another one may be brilliant in something, but John is very much average. So then, there will be a possibility that in something. At this place, if you know that the expressional form would stand for.
Well, you know, there's a lot of bright people, and every stone and every piece of dirt basically has been picked up by dummies and bright people. So the chances of finding something new and looking at it in a different way is rare. It could be done, but it's so rare that the probability is probably very close to zero.
Oh yeah, very close to zero is the chance to win the lotto. And every week there is a production of at least one millionaire who not necessarily represent any other values that you could value.
Well, I guess that's true in a way. But when your examples, we're talking about scientists and science and the discipline of science. You must maintain discipline and be able to explain things. You can't really do it with rocks and stones and dogs. It's got to be step by step in the subject that you're working on, I believe.
What I believe is there is a very simple explanation for this. Roy has so many talents, and he could use one, but not necessarily the other person has those talents. And I'm learning a lot from him. You have many talents, and I'm learning a lot from you. So is Dick, so is Glenn, so is Eric, and plenty of others. However, the major factor of prosperity of this country is very much narrow a direction. Those people become a master in their in their skill. So let's say I was following a certain route and I became a pretty good one in it. So now somebody say, hey, you know, you're talking about all of these extraordinary machines that cannot be proved, they produce electricity for free whatsoever. Well, I have a much better understanding, which gives me a basis for claiming that those machines exist, comparing to others, and to a field.
Well, all you have is the impression of what you think you saw, you know, and you're trying to express that, and you give credibility to all of these people who are doing these, what you think are, you know, good things. I have no faith in what they're doing because I have seen nothing that actually works. You know, you claim you've seen these things running for hours and thousands of laps and stuff like that. You know, very good. But if I saw it, maybe I would be impressed too. But so far, I haven't seen anything that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true what you say. It is exactly like you say. I am impressed that I saw, and you're not impressed with something that you didn't see yet.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. I don't care what people say. I watch what they do. And what they do is know who they are. So if somebody comes up with something that's going to work, it will spread like wildfire. Absolutely. But until that happens, I don't care who tries to stop it or all these spooky people or whatever they are, they're not going to stop it. When it's working properly, it will spread like wildfire. And it's needed. And I hope it comes soon. The world's in bed shape.
Roy have sent me a few days ago the link. I believe you got the same one, the University of Birmingham in the cyclotron. The physicists have obtained important new evidence showing that structure of carbon 12 nucleus, without which there would be no life on the Earth. We assembled that of the lateral triangle. The evidence was obtained by physicists in the United Kingdom, Mexico, and U.S. by measuring new rapidly spinning rotational state of the nucleus, and they found, they actually suggest, a holy state of the carbon 12, which plays an important role in creation of the carbon in red giant star. And they have the same shape as well. So, recent theoretical prediction, in contrast, suggested that the holy state is more like a triangle or bent arm. In other words, all the carbon in the universe is created in red giant stars by two alpha particles that would be the helium-4 nucleus. And they fuse to create a short-lived helium-8 nucleus, which then capture a third alpha particle from carbon-12. And that would show the reaction that occurs. And it's kind of puzzling. In other words, the world is made out of the triangle. the Fred Hoyle was doing the discovery in 1954. He predicted that carbon 12 had a unknown excited state. So right now they've been able to discover a double holy state, which boosts the rate of carbon-12 production at 3 years.
Who cares? Well, Hoyle wrote quite a few books. An astronomer, I believe. Good stuff. But what does that have to do with open energy?
What does it have to do with what?
What we were talking about, open energy.
I'm not...
I was changing the subject. And I was referring to the article that Troy sent me. Imagine that the words speak out of the context.
Okay, imagine the world made out of triangles. Is that a step above the atomic structure? A step below? What is he talking about?
Well, it is rather the molecular structure. So he would say that carbon-12 is described by three alpha particles. Then we could now think how that structure looks like. Is it flat? Is it tridimensional? How is it being arranged? And then it comes to the triatomic hydrogen molecular with ion H3+. And now when we look at that structure, we actually see very much characteristic lateral triangle shape. And that would then come to the conclusion that if the very much fundamental structure looks this way, then everything is made out of triangles.
Okay, but a triangle in itself is not a three-dimensional object, so you'd have to have multiple triangles to make it a three-dimensional object. I mean, if you want to rotate it as a cone, or make it look like a pyramid or something like that, but a triangle is not three-dimensional.
Well, it depends how you put them together. If you have only triangles to choose and to make the structure form, now everything is triangles. And it would be tridimensional. Do you agree with that?
No, not in all cases. Absolutely not.
So, you compare it to your known knowledge. So, you compare it to that what you've seen in life, experienced in life. You don't see everything flat. At least, your receptors doesn't give you the information that everything is flat. That's what you're saying.
Well, then we can't say it's a triangle. That's all I'm saying. You draw a triangle, it's, three lines. You rotate it, there's no Z. You know what I mean? You've got height, and you've got width, all right? But now, you want to add depth to it? Well, you don't have a triangle anymore.
When we talk about a carbon, there would be no life in the Earth if we wouldn't have it, and it resembles that of the equilateral triangle. That's the evidence that they found. That's right here.
Well, an equilateral triangle, look at the plane geometry, three lines, what is distance from their points? Basically describes it. Now you want to make that a three-dimensional item, you're going to have to add some stuff to it.
Oh, yeah, another triangle. Let me drift from the subject a little bit. When I was working in 2007, I believe, I was working on the ultimate tuning machine. I've been using a triangle or triangulation at first. And then that lead me to one conclusion.
Break or anything. It's a battery, but it puts hydrogen and aluminum batteries in kind of the same category, and in fact, the product of an aluminum battery is hydrogen, which you could run a car on. I don't know if you guys are hearing me. This is AC2IS.
John?
I don't know, Wes, you got cut out. There was some noise, and I didn't hear you. If you were speaking, I heard nothing.
Yeah, I think somebody was saying something, but I'm not sure.
And the name of that is not a flat brain, it's a smooth brain with no convolutions.
Okay, full brain. Yeah. Okay. So when I was working on this project, the first was pretty much obvious. You pick up any two points, and any two points that belongs to line will belong to any plane. So let's say you have a plane, and there you can always put those two points on the plane. But then you add another point, and guess what? When you have three points, those three points will always belong to the plane. Address here.
Well, there you go with the planes. If you're talking in flat plane, yeah, you go on a spherical plane, and now it's not really an equilateral triangle anymore. But some of the angles are not going to add up.
No, you take any three points in space, you can always place them on one plane. Now you take three other points and you put them in plane. Now you have a correlation between those two planes. By examining the correlation between those two planes, you can find the superpositioning and then eventually make the calculation as you achieve.
Okay, and why would you want to do that?
But the reason I was trying at that time to do that, when we talk about the triangles, is because I was trying to find means or the way to kill the target from any point without using the human machine. So there was eventually this ultimate killing machine. Before I find out that actually it's not my cup of tea. But yes, I did make the calculation. And to see it.
Okay. But, time well spent, I guess. I don't know.
Well, when you look at the three points in space, one of them would be the target, one of them would be the gun, and one of them would be the sniper. You not necessarily have to have a sniper at the point where you have a gun, and you not necessarily have to have a situation where gun is blinded and has to be directed by the gunman. But necessity is that you have a target.
Right, and when you have a target, you have to have target acquisition and range before you could eliminate a target.
Well, from the calculation, I got pretty nice results. Remember we spoke that I have started with the Cartesian mathematics, and then I switched to the sphere, which was the better way for me to make the calculation. Because in Euclidus, you can have geometry, you could have any three points, and those three points would not only belong to one plane, but also will always belong to the sphere. And to XGN.
Okay, well, there's basically, I think, four different types of geometry. So you work in spherical geometry, or solid geometry. Okay?
Good. So, by examining that, the only problem that I have had was, okay, we have the planar, which would be, let's say, horizontal triangulation. Now, let's say we have a plane that is in air, and the plane has a gun. Now, the plane has to hit the target. So, one point would be the plane, and the plane would be only steady in one point in time, but it would be moving. Now, you have a target that would be anywhere, and then you have a guy who decides, hey, we want to kill this target, and to achieve.
Okay, well, in real acquisition, you usually have a moving target and moving organs. So, the double fold that would have to be taken care of.
Well, the thing is that the gunman could be from the other side of the earth. doesn't have to see the plane. And a gun could shoot the target anywhere if it's in the direct view. That would be on the straight line. If it's not, that would be based on the spherical vector of line of flight of the bullet or whatever we use the medium for. And so it's here.
Okay, but I believe all of that has been obviated with the new systems they have today. That would not be useful.
So the usefulness of that is not necessarily in army or in Chinese people. The usefulness would be like a guiding, being able to guide the plane without the GPS system. So this system that I was working on could be used for any kind of use. It could be ultimate way of guiding the ships or even a replacement for the GPS. When you have a vertical pattern at 90 degrees to the planar 3 points or 2 points, then you can have calculation that would not require satellites to be present there. And so it's here.
Well, yeah, I would believe you could develop another system, but it would basically be handling the same information anyway. The same as the satellites are handling the information. There's no mystery there.
No, yeah, of course it is. No mystery here. The only thing is that in order for you to operate with the GPS system, you need a stellar structure of 24 satellites. And then they need the maintenance, they need to be placed there, and there is a plenty of money to be spent. Versus if you have had just a mathematics employed there, or geometry employed there, then everything would be data and to HCM.
Well, we have a basic system called a phalanx system, which works very well, extremely well. And it can put 20 millimeter rounds in anything that's moving or standing still. And it can detect, acquire, transfer, no friend from foe. Very good. And that can be used in other weapons.
You think about the evolution in technology. What I was trying to say is that if you have a 3 points in one plane and you have a knowledge about 2 points and an angle, you are always able to calculate the third one. But let's say you have a 2 points in a plane and then a 1 point in space. So you can freeze the time to that particular location of that point, and you can assign that point as either target, either a gunman, which would be the guy who makes the decision, or the gun by itself. So the replacement of the three variables is pretty much convenient comparing to what you're talking about.
Okay, that's what you believe, but don't forget, those 3 points you're talking about, it wouldn't make any difference where the weapon was located, or the target, or the observer.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, if one of the points happened to be a weapon, and the other point happened to be a target, you cannot just exchange them. Yeah, you need the physical change of the location of the mass and application.
Well, it would work. The algorithms would work in any direction, in any position, as long as it's a standard process. It wouldn't matter. The angles are going to be the same. It's just going to be things located in different positions.
I was going to calculation. One of the calculations was 400 feet, the other one 450 feet. All of them came, and then I made the visualization of this, the geometry, the pin that is placed 100 feet or 150 feet away from the gun would receive exactly a bullet